I'm David Hyde, and it's Election Day. We don't know who's going to win yet, but we do know that populist political speech is surging this fall.
Here's what's going to happen. The lobbyists will come and see me, but I don't give a about lobbyists. Okay?
This is an election year, so you will hear every candidate professing their allegiance to the needs of the working class, needs of small businesses. But the reality is that a lot of that talk will translate to very little.
This is not democracy. This is oligarchy, and we have got to end it.
That's Bernie Sanders, Kashama Sawant, and Donald Trump. Margaret O'Meara is a history professor at the University of Washington. Her new book is called Pivotal Tuesdays, Four Elections That Shaped the 20th Century. And she told me the appeal of political outsiders is nothing new here in Washington state.
This is a state that became a state at a moment of incredible reform and a real sort of energy for changing the system and disrupting things. And lots of different people had lots of different ideas about how to do things differently.
And one of the elections you looked at is the election of 1912. Who were the candidates? Who were the presidential candidates? And how did Washington vote?
1912 was the first election that I looked at in my book. And it was a wild and woolly four-way race with a Democrat, a Republican, and then two third-party candidates, one of whom was a former president, Teddy Roosevelt. So you have William Howard Taft, the incumbent. You have Woodrow Wilson, who himself was a newcomer on the political stage as a Democratic nominee. And then Theodore Roosevelt, Colonel Roosevelt, who was perhaps the most famous man in America at that time, had been president. He then decides to run again in 1912 for his old job against his old friend, William Howard Taft, doesn't get the Republican nomination, then breaks and joins a third party, leads a third party, a progressive party known as the Bull Moose Party after Teddy. It was really a sort of Teddy, you know, personality cult of sorts. And Washington State is one of the states, along with California and some other upper Midwestern states, that go, their electoral votes, our electoral votes, go for Roosevelt. So in the electoral map, we go for the third party.
And when you think of Roosevelt, you might think of him as the president who embraced a muscular foreign policy. Why was Washington State going for him in 1912, do you think?
In 1912, Roosevelt was the candidate of progressive reform. And he came back for a couple of years before that. He had barnstormed the country, including coming to Seattle in April of 1911. Big, big event in Seattle where he's talking about we need to be insurgents. We need to sort of change the way things are working. And talking about a much more bold vision for government in government action and regulation of capitalism and regulation of the market. And, you know, he's a Republican, by the way. This is, you know, a different day and age. The Democrats are the party of small government. The Republicans are the party that is increasingly talking about how can a central government kind of make some order out of this chaos.
So he does well in 1912. What other moments in Washington state history did you see similar things happening?
Well, three of the four elections I profile in the book had a third party or a sort of third candidate who was really a spoiler in the race in terms of determining, having an effect on the measurable effect, you could say, on the outcome. And one of those elections was the election 1992, an election when Ross Perot, as many recall, ran as a third party candidate, independent party candidate. And he got 24% of the popular vote in the state of Washington. Did he get any electoral votes? No. Bill Clinton won the state. But it was, I think, a reflection again of the same attraction to the outsider, to the reformer, to the plain spoken populist voice who's saying, you know what, let's do things differently. Let's, you know, speak truth to power. And there are a lot of voters in Washington state then and now that really, for that message, that has great appeal.
A lot of times people think about recent post-war Washington state political history as being fairly centrist, the sort of Scoop Jackson politics of Washington state. But there's this other history going on, too. How do those things fit together?
Yeah. Even while you had the centrist Scoop Jackson, Dan Evans politics, you've always had kind of politics on the left fringe and the right fringe that have been pretty vibrant. And they've kind of waxed and waned as time goes on. It's one of the reasons that Washington State doesn't always kind of follow the political winds. It hasn't predictably been a red state or a blue state. It hasn't predictably voted for the winner or the loser. It voted for Mike Dukakis, but it also voted for Ronald Reagan twice. It voted for Bill Clinton, but it also, you know, in 1912 voted for Teddy Roosevelt, who doesn't win, but also, you know, rocks the boat enough that William Howard Taft loses the incumbency. So, you know, you have these grassroots movements on the left and the right in Washington State that have, and a lot of independent-minded voters who, and I think that also feeds into the Washington State politicians like Scoop Jackson, like Dan Evans, who have gone against the mainstream of their own parties at the particular time, right? Mm. So Dan Evans is elected, you know, he's elected in the same election where Barry Goldwater is resoundingly defeated. He goes on to be reelected several times, and he is at the forefront of environmental policy, of things that we would put in, lump in the category of liberal now. And it reflects in part how much the political spectrum has changed, how what it means to be a Democrat or Republican has changed since then. But it also reflects a kind of individualistic, different politics out in the Pacific Northwest that doesn't necessarily follow national trends.
What is it about the political culture of Washington State that makes it likely or possible for candidates like a Teddy Roosevelt to do well here?
This is a state that was born in a reform era, a state that was on the forefront of the movement for direct democracy, putting initiatives and referenda on the ballot so voters are deciding directly what happens in terms of making law. That is a pronounced phenomenon in the American West and particularly in Pacific Northwest. This idea that governments and politicians are corrupt, that they cannot be trusted, that the way that you clean up and reform things is to bring stuff directly to voters. And there is a suspicion of centralized power here. There's a suspicion of, you know, we're not huge fans at the local level of strong executives, right? If a mayor starts throwing their weight around too much, then they might get voted out of office. Western Washington is a particularly kind of, it likes to think it has a very sort of non-hierarchical culture where it isn't big on birthright or pedigree, but it, you know, wants to treat people fairly and people have a fair shot.
Margaret O'Meara is a history professor at the University of Washington and the author of a new book, Pivotal Tuesdays, Four Elections That Shaped the 20th Century.